Hello, I'm Christine Milks. This is number 0215, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0215. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, the legendary Donny Osmond. He and his wife Debbie have started a home furnishing line called Donny Osmond Home.
My wife, for 35 years, has created this wonderful atmosphere at home. It hasn't been extremely peaceful with five children and six grandkids, but it's a refuge. It's a place where I can come and just be normal. And she has this ability to do that the way she's decorated it and the way she runs her home. And this is something that Debbie and I have been talking about for years now, opening up our ideas and how we decorate a home to the world.
Brian Daly is the author of Canada's other game, Basketball from Naismith to Nash. What makes this the perfect time for a book like this?
It became clear to me that just from the buzz generated by the NBA in Toronto in the mid-90s, and now we have an incredible golden generation of talent, the timing was perfect to try and capitalize on the buzz that's not just in here in Canada, but a lot of the Americans are wise to the talent in this country, sort of the neglected gift, if you will, and the European media as well.
Chinua Barheit from White Dove Communications talks about the future of social media.
People can't hide anymore. And whether or not you want to hide because it's Big Brother or it's for whatever reason, you're not going to be able to. And whatever information you have out there and how much you engage and discuss your personal items, it's going to get out there and ultimately you're going to be known for who you are. So I think the whole element is that you're not going to be able to hide, which is not a bad thing, but also you're going to be more transparent and be really, really who you really are. And you're going to come across in a way that's authentic to more people. And that's where I think the nets are going to be in 20 years.
And there's lots and lots and lots of stuff. And of course, an idiot of the day. The guest later, the person who told you this was show number 0215, was Christine Milks, an office administrator in Gananoque, Ontario, and a dear old friend of mine who goes way back to when I started my first on-air job in radio, oh, so many years ago. Thank you very much, Christine, for doing the guest slate on this edition of the Stuff File program, a program that's also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Let's get right to the stuff, shall we? Well, two one-time roommates from the University of Michigan announced in August that they have developed a smartphone app to accommodate the questionable number of people who seek an easy way to share leftover food on restaurant plates, you know, to save it from wasteful discarding. Now, using smartphone's location service, one diner can offer to clean another's plate or have a stranger rush to his own table for scraps. We're not going to make millions, one of the developers told NPR Radio in July. Yes, we know. That's painfully clear. Anyway, here's another person with plenty of time on their hands. A fellow by the name of Jian Yang, age 33, a media executive in Singapore, told Reuters in September that he was concerned about the diminished respect the Mattel Corporation is giving Barbie, reducing production in favor of trendier dolls like those modeled after the Twilight characters. Yang is apparently protective of his collection of more than, wait for it, 6,000 Barbies that dominate his row house, which he estimates have cost him the equivalent of nearly $400,000 since he took up the obsession when he was only 13. He said his parents have come to accept his passion, but acknowledged that he has had a few ex-girlfriends who felt insecure around his supermodels. Yang also owns about 3,000 other non-Barbie dolls, and on his last trip to New York, he bought 65 more. Okay, you probably just heard me say that Jian has had not one, but several ex-girlfriends. Shocking, I know. And you're probably asking yourself, how could all of those exes feel insecure around his 9,000 little plastic girlfriends. Well, I'm going out on a limb here to say that any woman who is willing to get into a relationship with a man in his 30s who has over 9,000 dress-up dolls and the wardrobes to go with them might have low self-esteem to begin with. That's all I'm saying. Anyway, moving right along. In August, the Mother Nature Network website showcased an array of camping gear seemingly designed for the daintiest of those ostensibly roughing it. The Blofeld outdoor couch inflates in minutes to produce a facsimile of a Las Vegas lounge sofa. The Rolla Rooster's 42-inch long steel fork assures elegance and evenness in marshmallow roasting. For fashion-conscious backwoods women, Teva makes high-heeled hiking sandals that go for $330 a pair. The mother of all Swiss Army knives by Wenga has so many gadgets that it suggests a parody of a Swiss Army knife. And to be a camper, though, is to sleep in a tent. And why not use a trailer-mounted opera tent, including hardwood floors and a wine cooler? Yeah. Okay, first, full disclosure. I have never been, am not, and never will be a camper. I mean, I don't understand the concept of why I would want to work hard to put a roof over my head for almost 50 weeks of the year and then spend the remaining part of the year pretending that I'm homeless. That being said, if you want to go out and commune with nature to find your inner beast, all the while avoiding other beasts who would like to devour your inner beast, then by all means, please go right ahead. But if you're going to camp, then really camp. I mean, no Wi-Fi, no hardwood floors, no high-heeled hiking sandals. Just curl up in your little sleeping bag and pray your aftershave and you aren't downwind from hungry bears, and that you don't become a future Darwin File story on the Stuff File program. That's all I'm saying. And speaking of which, we have a couple of Darwin File stories for you because, as you know, the Tree of Life is always self-pruning. Number one, a 40-year-old woman was killed in a near head-on collision in August in Spring Lake, Florida, while joyriding on the back road at night on her dirt bike. She was accidentally hit by her husband, who was also joyriding on his all-terrain vehicle, and who also died. And Darwin File story number two, a 50-year-old man in Bern, New York, was killed in August when, driving an all-terrain vehicle, he virtually decapitated himself on nearly invisible wire strung across a road as one of a series of booby traps that he had installed himself to protect his marijuana plants. Okay, this last guy, if he should ever make it up to the pearly gates, you know he's never, ever going to get in. And that's because when St. Peter hears what made him assume room temperature, all he's going to be able to do is laugh and laugh and laugh. Yeah. Anyway, let's get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, shall we? Fans of Donny Osmond will soon be able to buy Donny Osmond home products. Donny and his wife Debbie are launching a new multi-category home furnishings collection. And to talk about it, we have none other than Donny Osmond. Hi, Donny.
How are you, Peter?
Fine. Thanks for being on the program with us.
Nice to be with you.
It's interesting.
Last time I was in Montreal, it was a long time ago. I was doing Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat in Toronto.
Right.
And my wife and I took our children to Montreal. We had a week off and just thoroughly enjoyed it.
Excellent. Excellent. Now, you just mentioned you were traveling. You spend and have spent for your entire life a lot of time on the road. So is it that reason, is it very important for you that your home be that, just your home, and be very homey?
Well, you took the words out of my mouth. I couldn't have said it better. Absolutely, you know, because show business is a crazy world, as you well know, and it's a life of extremes, but the thing that gives me balance is that foundation of home. I can come home and leave my work at the doorstep, as it were, and my wife, for 35 years, has created this wonderful atmosphere at home. It hasn't been extremely peaceful with five children and six grandkids, but it's a refuge. It's a place where I can come and just be normal, and she has this ability to do that the way she's decorated it and the way she runs her home. And this is something that Debbie and I have been talking about for years now, opening up our ideas and how we decorate a home to the world, because it's more of a, because people ask us, what's the style? First of all, you can go to DonnieOsmond.com and find out, but it's more of a transitional kind of an eclectic style, very casual and comfortable, textured neutrals and kind of colored accents. And you mentioned that, you know, I do a lot of traveling. So what we do is that, for instance, when we were in London just a couple months ago, we were walking past this lighting store, and Debbie just fell in love with this particular design. So what we do is I take a picture of it in my camera. It goes to a Dropbox account, and we have a great brand management team, and it goes to them, and they look at these ideas and come back with unique ideas based upon that inspiration. And it's really a kind of a symbiotic relationship with all these people, because they do the heavy lifting. They're the ones that know what's going on in the marketplace, and Debbie and I put our touch to it.
35 years of marriage, as you say, so you know each other well, but now you're actually working together. Are you discovering even new things about yourselves after all this time because you have a different dynamic in your relationship now?
Well, nothing's changed. I mean, we do this all the time, and because people ask me, okay, how do you keep a relationship, especially in show business, together for that long, and now that you're business partners, what are you going to do when you come across a disagreement? Well, I have a philosophy, and that is whenever we do disagree on something and I'm wrong, I'm man enough to admit that I'm wrong. But if I'm right, I'm man enough to admit that I'm wrong. And it works.
When did the light bulb go off for the two of you? I mean, you say your wife's been you know, taking care and furnishing and decorating your homes for years, but when did the light bulb go off and say, you know what, I want to share this with other people. I want to do the Donny Osmond home products.
This has been 3 years in the making. Obviously, we've talked about it a lot over the 35 years, because people, when they come to our home, they say, this is not a typical show business home. I mean, you're not going to find gold records and accolades sitting all around the house. Our philosophy is that if there was a gold record on the wall, and my little, of course, they're all grown up now, but they come home from school and they've drawn a picture, how does that compete with the gold record? So the children are the most important, and their accolades are the most important thing in our home. So it's very family-friendly. Even the kids in our neighborhood have come over and just play and make themselves at home, open up the fridge and, you know, sit down and watch TV or whatever. But that's the kind of atmosphere that we try to create in our home, just a very family-friendly atmosphere.
I've been to the website, and I've seen some of the stuff that you have to offer, and the word I was going to use was user-friendly. It's not one of those situations, like you say, where a living room is roped off. It looks like traditional, family-friendly, user-friendly, you're-not-afraid-to-touch-it type of furnishings.
Well, traditional is a different type of word. It's not traditional. It's transitional, right, where it's more, you know, very clean, very, very, very light, type of neutrals, and just, you know, color accents here and there. That's been Debbie's taste. I started out with a love of modern, and she started out with a touch of traditional, like you said. But over the years, it's changed, and that's why we're saying our brand is transitional, because as things change, as things evolve, tastes change, trends change, we change with it, and that's the way we do it. We keep up with the times. We're looking ahead at the trends. You know, the new trend that's coming in is a honeycomb look with the color gray. So all of our partners, our manufacturing partners who do the heavy lifting and all this, they tell us all this stuff. And so, I mean, they're out. They do this for a living. It's not like I'm in the garage building sofas, you know. We don't do that. We just come up with the ideas of what we love, and we tell our manufacturing partners, and they come up with the ideas and present them to us.
Transitional, as you say. Would you also say kind of timeless?
Well, that's a very difficult word because it's so subjective. You know, 50 years ago, we would say, yeah, it was timeless, but it's got a style now. So that's why we say transitional, because what we like right now, 20 years from now, it may be completely out of line. So as our tastes change and evolve, so does everybody else's.
People can go to the website and see the collection. The people can go to DonnyOsmond.com. But where can people physically find your stuff?
Well, that's a good question. Here in the next couple of weeks, online stores like Amazon and other huge retailers are going to be making it available. But the big launch into showrooms and department stores and catalog independent retailers, that's happening in quarter one next year. We'll have over 1,000 products available in January, and it'll start to grow from at that point on.
There are a lot of people who not necessarily travel as much as you do, but they do travel, business types. Do you have any tricks or tips for people who travel like you do, who wanted to bring a little piece of home with them wherever they go?
Skype. I keep home with me wherever I go. It's funny because I'm basically home every day through Skype. But I just make sure nowadays, because I'm able to get home as often as possible. You can't beat walking through that front door or through the garage door and sitting down on your sofa and just having a friendly conversation with your wife. And that's one thing that we try to put across in this family-friendly atmosphere that we're trying to create. It's not just everybody sit around the television and watch a program together. Yes, that's fine to watch a movie and all that kind of stuff together, but have dinner together, talk together, create this atmosphere at home that everybody loves to just be in each other's company. Communicate, because there's so many things with the iPhones and iPads and all these games and everything that pull our attention, and they're great for what they do as far as entertaining, but you can't replace that family-friendly conversation of just being together.
You mentioned that you were in London, you saw some, your wife saw some stuff, and you saw some stuff, and you took pictures of it. The things that people will find in your collection, does it have a global appeal? In other words, you find things here, there, and everywhere that become part of what your collection is?
Well, you know, you've got cultures to deal with. So when you say global appeal, that's difficult to say because everything is so subjective. But in these days of social media and with the internet the way it is, the world is becoming a smaller and smaller place. So trends are now what we're finding, what our manufacturing partners and our brand management team is telling us. It's becoming more global and a smaller planet. So those tastes and change, like I said earlier with the honeycomb look, it's becoming more global, but you're never going to be able to appeal to 100% of the people 100% of the time. I mean, I've been in show business 50 years, and I've learned that not everybody likes Donny Osmond music, not everybody likes what I do, but despite the fact that we got the number one rated show in Las Vegas, but who's counting?
Let's talk about price. Is it affordable products?
The word we use is moderate. We want to make sure that as many people as possible can afford these products. One of the things that our brand management team and Debbie and I have mandated is that we don't want to get too cheap with this, because what happens is that if you get really cheap, you start compromising on the quality, and then you get a bad reputation about what you're putting out there. So it's moderately priced. You're not going to find us in high luxury stores, so it's not a high-priced item, although there will be some nice pieces that might be a little bit more in the higher range, but mostly it's moderately priced.
And we have just about a minute. Again, people can go to DonnyOsmond.com to take a look at some of the collection. What's on the horizon entertainment-wise for you? I know that you, as you mentioned, are the number one show in Vegas.
Yeah, we're pretty grateful for that. As a matter of fact, here next week, you're going to hear some announcements about here at the Flamingo. They're naming the showroom the Donnie and Marie showroom. So, I mean, we were supposed to be here for 6 weeks back in 2008. And Marie, I remember a conversation I had with Marie. We said, how are we going to fill seats for 6 weeks? And here we are celebrating our beginning of the sixth year at the Flamingo. So, and my 50th anniversary in show business is coming up at the end of the year, and I'm working on my 60th album, so I'm pretty busy. But with that busyness comes a need for balance, and that's why Debbie and I decided to do this, is because she's been able to help me balance my life and create that foundation called home.
Well, congratulations on your long career. Congratulations on what's happening in Vegas. And congratulations to you and Debbie on the Donny Osmond Home products. I thank you very much for being on the program with us.
It's great to talk to you, Peter.
The legendary Donny Osmond. Again, you can check out the Donny Osmond Home products line by going to his website at DonnyOsmond.com. And you can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0215, and you'll find the links to Donnie's site.
You're listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. You can email him at peter@thestufffile.com or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Kelly Alexander Show is your place to be for everything to do with health, lifestyle, and entertainment. Join us as we chat with celebrities like Emmy winner Mia Michaels from So You Think You Can Dance, best-selling recording artist Taylor Dane, and world-renowned astronaut Julie Payette. We also cover important topics like breast cancer awareness and how to help your child through bullying. All this and more, please join us, www.kellyalexandershow.com.
It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
Capture your need for sound.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Have you ever noticed on some of those public broadcasting pledge drives, they tend to sound like ransom demands in a kidnapping?
Hey, your kids like this, Mr. Rogers. It would be most unfortune if, for some unforeseen reason, you weren't in the neighborhood no more.
Well, I'm here to ask for your support in a non-threatening, non-obligatory kind of way. Part of the success of the Stuff File depends on the generosity of its listeners worldwide. So if you can, and if you want, please feel free to make a small one-time donation. Just go to the website at thestufffile.com and click on the PayPal donation button. You can donate $10, $5, or even $1, whatever you'd like.
You know that big bird? That would be one huge drumstick, if you know what I mean.
If you have a PayPal account, it's an easy transfer. And if you don't, all major credit cards are accepted. Your generosity would be much appreciated in keeping this show running.
About that antique roadshow, they might be seeing a little more concrete than they originally anticipated.
No strong-arm tactics, no ransom demands, just a simple please and thank you. To donate, visit thestufffile.com.
Coming to you from Canada, the land of universal health care, colorful money, and the correct spelling of the word theater, this is The Stuff File with Peter Anthony Holder.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk about the history of basketball, plus the future of social media. We, of course, have an idiot of the day and lots more Stuff File news coming your way on a program that's also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, The Smarter Way to Listen to Radio. By her own admission, Joan Hoyt, age 61 of St. Louis, has difficulty writing, is easily distracted, needs frequent breaks, and reads at about 2.5 times slower than her peers. Yet, she wants to be a lawyer. She filed a lawsuit recently against the Law School Admission Council for special accommodations to take the standardized admissions test after the council offered to grant her only 156 extra minutes for the exam. She also demanded a room by herself with a white noise machine and the ability to bring a computer and food and drinks to the exam. States have made similar accommodations for bar exams, but those applicants have already successfully endured the intellectual rigors of law school. You know, reading stories like this year after year after year on the Stuff File program, I am discovering my religion more and more with each passing day, because I really do need to pray that this woman never, ever, ever passes the bar exam, because if she does, that's a bar that certainly has been lowered. And speaking of religion, is oral sex permitted in Orthodox Judaism? If so, must any lubricant used be kosher, or is kosher required only for substances ingested into the body? These questions were not answered by California's Trigg Laboratories, which decided recently to vie for a kosher label for 8 lines of ecstasy lubricant under its wet label. And following an inspection by the Rabbinical Council of California, was granted it. Many authorities believe that non-kosher products can be used if, like lipstick, they are applied but not ingested. Whoa. You know, we are treading dangerously close to the line on this one, aren't we? I mean, what punchline can I come up with here? We're talking kosher, so mentioning the word pork is out. Let's just move on, shall we? Okay. It was a tough sell for performance artists Doug Melnick and Ian Mosden to defend their controversial show at the Winnipeg Fringe Festival in July. Wrote one reviewer, "What I saw on the stage was not one, not two, but 3 mayonnaise enemas. I do not need to see any more mayonnaise enemas for the rest of my lifetime. Explained Melnick to a CBC reporter, if all you're trying to do is figure out what people want and make it for them, that's not art. You're just a shoemaker. Okay, first of all, I'm assuming, like all alleged true artists, they aren't looking to cash in commercially because I think it's safe to say you'll never get residuals from mayonnaise manufacturers due to the fact that people in the audience will probably never go near mayonnaise again. Second, I'm assuming their colons are clean as a whistle. And third, I'm also assuming neither of them date much. A July direct mail campaign by the Federal Conservative Party here in Canada intended to show concern for the disabled population, and they might have fallen short, according to a Toronto Star report. The first wave of brochures supporting jobs for all Canadians, meaning the disabled as well, featured the well-known wheelchair symbol and a message in a series of braille dots. However, the brochure was useless to blind recipients who could neither see the dots nor read them, as the dots were printed on a flat surface. That's my government. Yes, that's my government. Oh dear. So, who's blind now? And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, the village of Homer Glen, Illinois, has ruled that beauty salons may be licensed to serve alcoholic beverages to customers. The new category of beauty salon and spa liquor license mandates that booze has to be part of a paid-for package that includes some sort of beauty treatment, which will keep salons from just being a bar. Well, you know, the word salon is very close to saloon, but I digress. You know, the more the customers drink, when you think about it, the better they think they look. So it just might work out for the salons in the long run. Anyway, let's get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program, shall we? The NBA is one of the premier sports leagues in the U.S., and each year, the NCAA's March Madness lives up to its name as it captures the attention of millions of Americans. But as any Canadian will tell you, the game that is so revered in America was invented by a Canadian. Journalist Brian Daly is the author of Canada's Other Game, Basketball from Naismith to Nash. And Brian joins us on the line from right here in Montreal. Hi, Brian.
How you doing there, Peter?
I'm fine. Thanks for being on the program with us. You've written this book, and as I said, you are a journalist, and this is your first book. I'm assuming that basketball is something that's a great passion for you to want to put this book together. What made you decide that you had to write this book?
Oh, man, being part of that subculture of basketball in Montreal, you're sort of always on the down low, really. Nobody really pays much attention to this sport, but it became clear to me that from the buzz generated by the NBA in Toronto in the mid-90s, and now we have an incredible golden generation of talent, the timing was perfect to try and capitalize on the buzz. It's not just in here in Canada, but a lot of the Americans are wise to the talent in this country, sort of the neglected gift, if you will, and the European media as well. And so when I pitched the book originally, two different Toronto publishers jumped on it, even though neither of them had ever done a book on basketball. So, hey, we're maybe 100 years later than the Americans, 100 years too late, but better late than never.
What is it did you attribute the current, what obviously you're saying is maybe the beginning of a new renaissance of the sport in this country? What do you attribute that to?
Indirectly, I would say that immigration, the much maligned Canadian immigration policies, have had a very, very good effect on basketball. You look demographically at who's playing hockey, for example. It would traditionally be the descendants of Europeans, but when you had the massive West Indian immigration and South Asian immigration starting in the 60s and really picked up in the 80s, that's when you started to see young people going towards the sport of basketball. I'm the child of immigrants myself from the West Indies, and although baseball was our first sport, when we decided to pick up another one, it was basketball. And so that's where you're seeing the massive numbers of West Indian, African, South Asian immigrants in cities like Toronto, Montreal, and elsewhere. They're really driving this wave, I think, of interest in the sport.
Is it also not possible that with modern technology the way it is in all sports, that basketball is still one of the sports that is not necessarily cost prohibitive? I mean, all you need is a pair of shorts and a pair of shoes, basically.
That has a lot to do with it, and certainly young people in the inner city and their parents especially have to make decisions as to what to play. And, you know, we were confronted, even living in Kirkland and in the West Island of Montreal, where, you know, we weren't poor or anything, but my dad was confronted with the cost of getting all the hockey equipment, as well as cost of registration. When you deal with basketball, it's much lower registration costs, and we just had to drill down the court and drill down the street to the local court and play there. And of course, every school in Canada has a hoop, so accessibility also has a lot to do with it. You're right.
Two things about the book, dealing with the title. One, you call it Canada's other game, and I'm just wondering if you've heard from people from the football world who are not crazy about that idea. And two, you the subtitle, Basketball from Naismith to Nash. So in addition to talking about what some of the current players that are out there, you go into the history of the game. Being a basketball aficionado that you are, in doing your research, what did you learn about the game in Canada that surprised you?
What surprised me, Peter, more than anything else, was just how big basketball was when it was first invented. And that sort of plays into your first part of your question about Canada's other game, because if you examine the history of basketball in the first half of the 20th century, it would have been the number one or number two sport in many regions of Canada, most notably in Atlantic Canada, as well as in parts of British Columbia and parts of southwestern Ontario. Basketball would have been the number one or number two sport that was played in those areas. And I have to make a mention here of the Edmonton Grads, who many people haven't heard of, but it was a women's basketball team that operated out of Edmonton's commercial high school from 1915 to 1940. It was not really high school players. It was actually the graduates of that school had a basketball club that operated out of the school. And can you imagine, Peter? They were 512-10. That was their record, 5-12-10 over that 25-year period. They were hammering the Americans unlike anything you've ever seen. They were undefeated in Olympic exhibition tournaments in four consecutive Olympics. So all the hand-wringing that we have now about our team never qualifying for the Olympics, that women's team competed in exhibition tournaments in the Olympics and was undefeated. And they were selling out Edmonton Arena, the same arena that hockey teams were selling out. The Edmonton Grads, the women's team, was selling out a 5,000-seat arena and were one of the top attractions anywhere in Canada. So there are other examples of how there was a point, Peter, where prior to the Second World War, where basketball could have gotten to the level that it was at in the United States had there maybe been some more corporate involvement. But then after the war effort and the Grads disbanded, the sport then, and of course the NHL, just became a sore, roaring success around the 1940s and 50s, and so that's where basketball got buried.
So part of it was, as you say, the oncoming war, but also not so much that basketball didn't move forward, it's just that other sports did?
The story of pro basketball has just been a wasteland in this country. I mean, for the Vancouver Grizzlies to be gone after only 6 years, in 2001. It's one of the worst failures in history, and there are many, many other examples. Can you imagine? There have been 44 pro and semi-pro teams in this country over the last 35 to 40 years. Most of them no longer exist, whereas the CFL, the consolidated in the 50s, the NHL was formed in the 20s, when attitudes towards pro athletes began to become more positive and amateurism became, you know, less of a factor. So the NHL, of course, we know about the story there, the CFL, and the absence of a basketball league to drive interest is a major factor, I think, in why the sport sagged here and took off in places like the United States, the old Soviet Union, now Russia, all through Europe and South America.
You live here in Montreal. You've got a Canadian publisher for this book. It talks about Canada and its relationship to basketball. But in your heart of hearts, who do you want to tell this story to more? Do you want to tell it to the Americans that, hey, this game was invented in this country? Or do you want to tell it to the Canadians who might not be aware of that fact?
The Canadians, Peter. The Americans are the kind of people who will jump on something as soon as they see it's hot. You don't need to convince them that basketball is important. And if they see a Canadian such as this young Toronto kid, 18 years old, Andrew Wiggins from Vaughan, father was in the NBA, he's starting at the University of Kansas this month, he will be a superstar barring injury and will be a number one pick in the NBA draft in 2014 barring injury. The Americans love jumping on the future stars. These are not American. Canada, I got to tell you, it's a little bit of a different animal. Canadians sometimes have a very strange reticence to jump on their own stars in certain domains. They can do it in certain key instances, but it seems as though there's more of a sales job that needs to happen there. They're very I can't exclude myself. I'm Canadian. We're very cautious by nature. So you better bet that I want this book to become entrenched, deeply entrenched in the psyche of the average Canadian. And so they can just get an excitement, a level of hype and excitement about some of these young men and women who have given their lives to this sport. And, you know, it would be unfortunate if the likes of Andrew Wiggins, for example, this young kid out of Toronto, if he became the next, you know, LeBron James or the next Kevin Durant, it would be unfortunate if Canadians weren't as excited about what they had produced as the Americans already are.
You mentioned that we lack a certain buzz, a certain sense of excitement, both in sports and in jumping on bandwagons and certainly in business. You also said that you went to get a publisher for this book, and you had two who were chomping at the bit to publish this book. Were you surprised at the relatively easy sale you made of getting this book published?
I was shocked. I'm still shocked, Peter. You know, the thing that drove home that point was in my interviewing process with the 45 people I interviewed for this book, and three of them had tried to get basketball books done themselves and were turned down. And so, you know, there was that sort of tinge of jealousy on their part, like, how is it that you got this done and we couldn't get it done? And a fourth person I interviewed had to self-publish a book on Jack Donahue, the greatest, possibly the greatest basketball coach in Canadian history, though he is from New York, but he coached our national team to 2 fourth place finishes in the Olympics between, you know, 1976 and 88. He had to self-publish his book on Jack Donahue, one of the great characters you'll ever see in any domain of Canadian society, who adopted this country as his own and raised his kids in Ottawa. And these kids are Canadians now, passed away in 2003, but had respect of Mike Keenan, the Iron Mike, had him come into the NHL locker rooms and give, you know, pep talks to his hockey team because Donahue was such a colorful character. Those type of people who lived their lives in this country and built this sport against very tall odds. So you can imagine, of course, my surprise when I find out that, you know, people at Dundurn Press, I got to give a plug to Dundurn for green lighting the project, that people at Dundurn are fans of the sport, and, you know, maybe in previous eras they didn't see the viability of a project like this, because I'm certainly not the first person to make a pitch of this nature. But now to have interest in the publishing capital of our country to get this book out there and promote it shows you that we are catching, you know, the business community is catching up and catching on to the idea that there's money to be made in this sport.
The book is called Canada's Other Game, Basketball from Naismith to Nash. It's published by Dunder and written by Brian Daly. You can find it on Amazon.com and Amazon.ca. You can also check out Brian's website at qhoops.net. I thank you very, very much, Brian, for being on the program.
That's great, Peter. I really appreciate being here.
Brian Daly, author of Canada's Other Game, Basketball from Naismith to Nash. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0215, and you'll find the links to Brian's website, plus links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order his book directly. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob DiRigo-Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. Flu season officially starts this week, and even though doctors say everyone should get a flu shot, many people won't. Some say the vaccine causes the flu. Others say the flu is no big deal. Well, experts assure us that it's medically impossible to get the flu from the vaccine, and since the flu kills thousands of people each year, it is a big deal. But many still won't get the vaccine because they think it may be toxic. One of the reasons for this concern is that many years ago, a researcher caused widespread fear by claiming that some vaccines could actually harm children by causing autism. Let's be fair, this is a serious issue. What many people don't know, however, is that a couple of years ago, a respected medical journal exposed that researcher as a fraud. He was paid by plaintiff lawyers to manufacture evidence for lawsuits they filed against vaccine makers. In short, it was a scam. Don't let fraud put your health at risk. Learn more. Visit us at centerforamerica.org.
This is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Pay very close attention. There could be a test leader.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk about the future of social media. Plus, there's an idiot of the day. And we have a couple more Stuff File news stories to get to right here, right now on a program also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Eileen Friedman said she had been parking in her driveway for 18 years, but now there's a problem. We're no longer allowed to use our driveway to park because of a law that says you have to park at least 30 feet away from the street. She can't. The law goes back half a century but wasn't enforced until recently. Now the Pittsburgh Bureau of Building Inspection is sending out warning letters and tickets. City Councilman Corey O'Connor, who is fighting the issue, said one family's fine was $2,400. Under current law, you have to have an occupancy permit, he said. The funny thing about that is we don't tell you that you need an occupancy permit. Excuse me, how's this for an occupancy permit? The deed to your house? Does that qualify? And Dana Carter's debut as principal at Cala Mesa Elementary School in California's San Bernardino County was quite inauspicious, as parents quickly objected to his August policy of requiring kids to drop to one knee when addressing him. One parent said her daughter was forced to kneel while awaiting his attention and then to rise only when he lifted his arms. Carter said he would discontinue the policy and insisted that he had instituted it for safety and not because he imagined himself as royalty. Yeah, I sense this is going to be a very long school year at that school, and I'm also going to watch this closely to see if he starts building a moat around the building. Anyway, let's get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program, shall we? What's the future of social media? What will it look like in 20 years? That's a question we have put to Shanoa Barhite, who is a social media maven, cultural storyteller, entrepreneur, and a productivity advocate. She has a company called White Dove Communications, which is a full-service marketing and communications agency, and she joins us on the line right now from Dallas, Texas. Hi, Shanoa.
Greetings. How are you?
Doing fine. Thanks for being on the program with us.
Of course.
So we're getting you to rub up your crystal ball and try to answer that very sticky question. What will we be doing as far as social media, in your estimation, 20 years from now?
You know, that's really interesting. And there's lots of people talking about that right now. And I think in looking at where we're at, what's happening, what's occurred over the past maybe even 5 years, this is going quickly. I mean, what's happening with social media networking sites, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, Reddit, Pinterest, I mean, these things are quickly happening, and there's waves and droves of how people are experiencing them. And I think ultimately the one thing I want to say, that the platform I want to just talk about today, is people can't hide anymore. And whether or not you want to hide because it's Big Brother or it's for whatever reason, you're not going to be able to. And whatever information you have out there and how much you engage and discuss your personal items, it's going to get out there, and ultimately you're going to be known for who you are. So I think the whole element is that you're not going to be able to hide, which is not a bad thing, but also you're going to be more transparent and be really, really who you really are, and you're going to come across in a way that's authentic to more people, and that's where I think the nets are going to be in 20 years.
Okay, there's a positive to that, but there's a downside, and that is people are saying that one of the things social media causes or leads to is a lack of privacy. So is there any way one can maintain a certain amount of privacy, or at least assume to have a certain amount of privacy in the world that we're heading toward?
I think so, but I think it's going to ultimately hurt us, right? So, for example, where we're going in 20 years from now is, it's, you know, Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble, all these big brands, where they're really winning is getting people to have recommendations, to engage, to have a point of view. So what occurs is that whatever you're interested in, say it's cooking a fish in sea salt, like an entire dish of sea salt, you're going to have to find out how to do it, then you're going to Google something, or you're going to go to Facebook, or you're going to go wherever and find out, how do I cook an entire fish in sea salt? Well, ultimately, based on your usage habits, the algorithm is going to show up. It's going to pull up people who have rated books or have given recommendations, or they found a great Alton Brown cooking show that has it, but it's going to show up for you. So ultimately, it's technology is here to serve us, and that's really the core bring in promise of technology, is that it makes our lives better. It just having us actually envelop it and realize the good that it can do in our lives. So to your question, though, sure, you can just not participate, right? You cannot participate, and you're not going to get as much experience from it. You're not going to get the greatness that comes with being able to have what you need at your fingertip and have it in a way where your particular community of folks and people you engage with are going to be able to be the people to give that to you.
One of the things about social media and the internet in general is that a picture of who a person is developed by where they search and what they do. Now, let's use myself as an example. I am in the media, and therefore I talk to a lot of different people from different walks of life on different topics, some of which personally I might not care about. But because I may have to do research on certain things, I may search certain places, I may search different areas, and therefore a picture of me comes up that isn't necessarily correct as to who I am.
You're absolutely right, and that happens all the time. And, it's unfortunate, but I think the thing is that, getting back to my original point is, if we're getting to a place in social media where who you are and who you're known for in your community and your peers is truly authentic, you're not putting a front up, your mask is coming down because you're just, you can't be everywhere at once talking about your life. So in essence, you're getting to a point where it's all working together as an ecosystem, right? So I think people will see, if you happen to look up something torrid on Huffington Post, shall we say, people are going to realize, that doesn't sound like he would do something like that. So I don't think it's a negative necessarily, but I think it even makes you want to make sure to really do and put your brand out there about who you are and what you're up to in a way where people see it and they assume that that's a blip. So I don't think it's a concern necessarily, but I absolutely hear what you're saying.
Is there any concern on your thought? And you're in the business of dealing with social media. You have a full-service marketing and communications agency called White Dove Communications. Is there a time when you feel we should turn off social media?
Yes, absolutely. And it's funny, a lot of the big thought leaders in social media are doing just that. And there's now a wave of conversation happening where it's a phenomenon called, going on social media vacation, and people are blogging about it or writing articles about it. And they're going on vacation, they're taking an entire week off. And it's interesting, right? Because when they come back, the results are pretty typical. They're saying it's like time stood still. I just got back and jumped back into life, and then it was still there, and nothing really was that important. So I think there's a fine line of being too involved with it, too engaged. On the other hand, if you're a human being and you want to build community and you have friends and you care about certain things, you want to add value to the world by offering up your particular skill sets or things that you care about, and so you do that in social media. So I think that there is a passion and a little bit of withdrawal symptoms for sure. I think for the most part, people will get a sense to clear their head, maybe actually read a newspaper. But I think there's always a sense of, what am I missing? What's happening right now? Because ultimately, in social media, you would find breaking news on what's happening in the Middle East prior to even CNN breaking it sometimes. So there is a sense of being on top of it all the time, but there also is a sentiment of people saying, I'm going to get off for a week and try this. And I think more people will be doing that.
You're in a business that deals with social media. You have an idea where it's going in the next 20 years. You keep your ear to the ground because it's part of what you do. So having that kind of knowledge, what do you do personally when it comes to your image out there on social media?
That's a great question. That really is. And I'm sitting here listening to you, and I'm thinking about my son. And I'm thinking of my son because he's actually 11, and he's engaged. His school uses iPads for their curriculum. He has e-books. Like he is the next generation of how all this works. And he and I have lots of conversations, and I think it kind of points to your question. which is, what do you put out there? Well, I just happen to really have a personal passion about giving back to Native Americans in a variety of ways. And so I make a point to really, you know, dig deep and find out some of the issues and challenges that I had in my life that I had to overcome. And I talk about that. I'm very transparent about, you know, who I am. And I think the more you can be that, I think it's better, right? And for my son, what I teach him is the same thing is, you know, if he happens to like lacrosse, let's find some lacrosse players to follow, and let's, you know, maybe do a little event in the neighborhood, or let's create something, let's do something, because ultimately this is all fun. This is supposed to be fun. If it's not fun, we shouldn't be doing it, right? So, you know, going out there and just really playing and having fun, but yet really trying to find out, like, what is it that we were designed for to give back, and focus on that, and really I think you can't go wrong.
You know, one of the things I keep hearing about, especially when it comes to trying to get a job, is people are always saying, oh, be careful what you're on your Facebook, what your tweets are, because who you are in your spare time, you know, going out to frat parties and getting drunk and having pictures and Instagram and all that is going to come back and hurt you when it comes to getting a job. But, you know, I look forward to 20 years from now. I get the feeling that, you know, what I've just said is something of an older generation, and that the younger people who have all done that, it won't be such a big deal 20 years from now, because everyone has those pictures, and therefore, right. it's not a deterrent to getting a job, because it's like, oh yeah, you grew up. Congratulations.
You know, I think there's that, but I think also there's going to be a little bit of a course correction of behavior, because all things ultimately change behaviors, right? So I think when people start realizing that what they do put out there, you know, and it's right now when, you know, there's a kidnapping that happens, and then the girl's pictures from Twitter and Facebook and all the inappropriate things she's ever done in her life is now on CNN, you know, people in her age group are looking at that, and then they're realizing that there's something to be done about it, right? And so I don't think they're consciously making the decision now to not do some of the things they shouldn't be doing, but I think ultimately it's going to get there. And I think also a lot of new social media networking sites have popped up that make it more private to some extent. But at the end of the day, nothing's necessarily private. But I think there's some underground type social media networking sites that a lot of the younger generations going to, trying to get away from the bigger Facebook, Twitter, and trying to be a little bit more, trying to hide a little bit more. But ultimately, I think it's going to be a course correction where people are starting to be, or hopefully, will be a little bit more disciplined in what they do and say in general.
I have just about a minute, so I just want to find out a little bit for our audience. I mentioned earlier White Dove Communications. People can go to the website, which is www.whitedove.com. That's .com. Can you tell us what people will find when they go to the site?
Right. You know, so my big thing is branding. I love branding, and what that means ultimately is trying to find out what does your target audience think about you? The people who really enjoy working with you, what do they think about you? And use that to leverage all of your marketing stories and your brand stories, and your everything that you do should be based off of a point of difference that you have in the world. And it's not any different for a person to be personally branded or a corporation. It's really not. But the intersection that I really love about it is really getting the story out there, like telling the true story about who you are and what you're doing, because there's a billion stories in this world and between corporations and individuals. But that's the area where I really focus on. And social media just happens to be a means to an end. It's not the thing to do, but I think making sure that your branding is correct from the get-go, that's where it all starts.
Shanna, I thank you very much for being on the program with us. It's a pleasure to talk to you.
Oh, my pleasure.
Shanoa Barhide from White Dove Communications. You can check out her website at whitedovecom, with two M's, .com, one M. And you can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0215, and you'll find the links to her site. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Time now for the Idiot of the Day.
And now it's time for the strange things adults do. The Stuff File presents the Idiot of the Day.
Sheriff's deputies in Fort Bend County, Texas, say two men who burgled a home storage shed didn't get very far. They ran out of gas 100 yards away as they made their getaway. But that's not what brought law enforcement in. The men had gone from door to door with a gas can asking for fuel, leading more than one of the neighbors to call 911. Deputies, suspicious of the men and their cargo, which included a lawnmower, inside their SUV, arrested Cody Allen Andel, age 24, and Herman Duane Efron, age 34. The story of cutting grass at 3 a.m. just really didn't fit, a department spokesperson said. Yeah, I bet. Why would someone commit a crime with no gas in their tank and then go door to door with a gas can to try and get fuel at 3 a.m.? One reason, and one reason only, they're idiots!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program number 0215. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, and once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links and all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0215. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You could also find me on Facebook and Twitter as PA Holder, and don't forget to check out the Stuff File store, where you can purchase a plethora of Stuff File merchandise, from t-shirts to mugs to tote bags to mouse pads. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, streaming on PCJ Media and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on iTunes and Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorps in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. Bye-bye.
Been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. No animals were harmed in the production of this program, except, of course, the tasty ones. Good night and pass the paprika.